Somebody needs to write a thesis on the theology of the therapy sisters. Thank you. It's always great to have you here. Some of the stories about Jesus are so familiar that they enter the common vernacular. Walking on water, you hear people kind of joke about that all the time, even if they've never been in a church. Maybe calming the storm, but certainly changing water into wine has captured the imagination for centuries. Just because a story is familiar doesn't mean we really know what it says. So it's worth going back to look at the water to wine story, because there are a couple of things we can use in our own lives. And that's the only reason ever to read the Bible, to see how it applies to us today. And the remarkable thing about the Bible is it does. Every generation sees itself in the Bible's stories and finds information about how to live, even as the human species continues to develop its understanding of what we call God. In Unity, whenever we look at Jesus, we consciously look at ourselves. We believe he was trying to show us what's possible for all human beings when we are fully aligned with God, when we're expressing our own divinity, when we live from oneness. So I'm going to read two versions of this story today. The first is from the regular Bible. It's John chapter 2. The book of John starts kind of abruptly. There's the part about in the beginning was the Word. And then John the Baptist says, Jesus is coming. I saw the Spirit descend on him. And then Jesus shows up and gathers a few disciples. That's all in the first chapter. Then in the second chapter, all of a sudden, he's at this wedding. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. And the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." And his mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and didn't know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." That part always amuses me, serving the cheap wine after everyone's drunk. I don't know whether that was really a custom, but it does make the point that Jesus not only turned water into wine, it was primo stuff. But let's go back to this scene with his mother. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." So running out of wine at a wedding would be a damper on the party and probably embarrassing in a small town. There's been speculation that the reason Mary was worried about the wine was because this was Jesus' own wedding. But we have studied the book of John in some detail, and it appears most of these characters and scenes are literary devices to tell a story. They appear in John and nowhere else in the Bible. So we might not want to look too hard at the character's motivation. For whatever reason, Mary was worried about the wine. And all she said was, "They have no wine." And Jesus immediately knew she expected him to do something about it. We know that because he resisted her. "Woman, what concern is that to you and me?" Now, calling her woman is not as cheeky as it sounds to us. It's more like ma'am, and I know that, and I still think Jesus sounds harsh. Then he says, "My hour has not yet come." He knows exactly what Mary is asking, and he doesn't want to do it. So what's the background here? We don't know. But Jesus must have been an unusual child. Mary knew all along he was special. She must have seen him experimenting with his powers, like watching young Clark Kent become aware of how far he could kick a football, or that he could fly, or Harry Potter waving a wand and making things happen through trial and error. Obviously, Jesus' family knew what he could do with manifestation, and his mother was putting it to practical use. Like my mother used to call me to reach things on the top shelf because I was taller. Mary knew Jesus could solve this problem with the wine, and he knew that's what she wanted him to do. So why do you suppose he was reluctant to do it? My hour has not yet come. Maybe he didn't want to show off. Maybe he didn't want to draw attention to himself. Maybe he didn't want people to see his powers and start asking for favors like his mother did. Maybe he didn't want to appear too different. He must have been different from the other kids growing up. And this is where we come in. Why are we sometimes reluctant to engage our divine powers? Jesus said later, anything he could do, we could do, but that's hard to believe, isn't it? Our reluctance might be that we don't feel worthy, we're getting mighty big for our britches comparing ourselves to Jesus, or we're scared of what other people would think, or we're afraid we'll make the wrong choices. I'm not talking about doing magic tricks. When we truly live from divine consciousness, at the level of unconditional love and forgiveness where Jesus was, it does make us different from most other people. We're too compassionate to gossip. We're too sure of divine order to worry about world events. We're too aware of the divine power moving through us to believe in sickness or death. Most of us aren't there every day, but that's what we're going for. In Unity, we call this the Christ. Not Jesus the man. The Christ is divine energy in each of us. Jesus showed us what it looks like. He was expressing Christ energy. And the closer we get to Christ consciousness, the less willing we are to play ain't it awful with our friends. It's almost hard to have a conversation when you're in a place of peace and trust. It's like living with one foot in another world. You might have known people like that, or maybe you are one. I have a minister friend who truly sees nothing but the good in other people. She sees their divine essence. It's wonderful to be around her. I love myself through her eyes. But she's been sucker punched a few times. While she was seeing only the good, that person behaved badly. And of course, that happened to Jesus too. He saw the divine in every person. In some, he could call it forth, especially for healing. In others, he had to tolerate their humanity. Maybe we're afraid that living in divine consciousness will mean we're alone and vulnerable. But in this story about the wedding at Cana, Jesus is right on the precipice of revealing who he really is and what's possible for us. And his mother outs him. She waves away his objections and turns to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you." And maybe that's all we need, just a nudge to get out there and be our best selves, to live to the heights we know are possible instead of hanging back with the crowd the way Jesus was doing at the wedding. It's one thing to study and contemplate spiritual laws when you're by yourself, or even to manifest good for yourself. It's another to put it into action with everyone watching. So Jesus told the waiters to fill the 6 large jars with water. These are big earthenware jars that sit on the floor. The story specifies they hold 20 or 30 gallons each. So we're talking about 180 gallons of wine to finish off this party. They filled the jars with water, and somehow when the servants dipped the cup in it, it was wine. Now, let me read you a different version of the story. Actually, it's only different in a couple of ways, but they're important. This is from a gospel called The Beloved Companion. The legend is this document, this gospel, was brought from Alexandria, Egypt, to southern France in the middle of the first century, which would have been just 2 or 3 decades after Jesus lived. The document was preserved secretly by a community there and was the foundation of their belief. It was translated into English about 5 years ago from the original Greek by a woman named Johanna de Quillen, who grew up in that French community. It is very much like the book of John. Some believe it was the basis for John, which was written later. But the Beloved Companion was clearly written by Mary Magdalene, and it has greater roles for women. Cynthia Bourgeau, an Episcopal priest you've heard me quote, who has written her own book about Mary Magdalene, says, "If this gospel is phony, it's still a beautiful, mystical reflection that is consistent with Jesus' highest understanding. And if it's genuine," she says, "then it changes everything." In the Beloved Companion, Mary Magdalene describes Jesus as someone representing us. She says, "In him was life, and that light was the light of humanity." She says, "Many people rejected him, but to those who received him, he gave the power to become the children of the living spirit." So here's the same story from the Gospel of the Beloved Companion. On the third day of the week, there was the marriage feast in the house of Simon near Cana in the land of Judah. At the feast were Miriam, the mother of Yeshua, Mary and Jesus, and his brothers Jacob and Joseph, and his sister Miriam Salome. Also in that place were Martha of Bethany, the sister of Miriam called the Beloved Companion, and Lazarus, her brother, who Yeshua would restore to life. Levi, whom some have called Matthew, was also there, along with Thomas, called the Twin, later known as Doubting Thomas, who was a friend to the companion. All of the other disciples had also been invited. So just notice how this version pulls out the focus a bit. Not just on Jesus and his mother, but the whole gang was there. And women are mentioned along with men. And in this version, Mary Magdalene is in fact the sister of Martha. So Mary and Martha, of the Mary and Martha story, that's Mary Magdalene. And Lazarus is their brother. Lazarus only appears in the book of John in the Bible. When the wine soon gave out, his mother came to him and said, "Soon there will be no wine." And Yeshua said to her, Lady, what does that have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now there were 6 water pots of stone set there for the purpose of purification. Yeshua said to the servants, "Fill the water pots with what little wine you have, to each one a measure." So they did as he told them. Then Yeshua stood and raised his right hand and blessed the pots. And therefore he said to them, "Now draw what you need, that all the guests may drink their fill." He told them also to take some of the wine they'd drawn to the steward of the feast. And the steward had the same reaction: "You've saved the best for last." So what's different in this story? It's the instructions Jesus gives to the servants. Fill the water pots with what little wine you have. Start with what you have. That's actually a more typical Bible miracle than just going, poof, your wine. You remember feeding the 5,000 with loaves and fishes? Jesus started with what he had, a few loaves and fish, and he blessed it. To bless means to confer prosperity upon, to expand. He blessed the loaves and fishes and fed 5,000 people. He blessed this little bit of wine, and there was enough for everyone. There's also an Old Testament story about a widow who was going to have to sell her little boys into slavery to work off her debts. And she came to the prophet Elisha because her husband had worked for Elisha. And Elisha asked her, "What do you have in the house?" She said, "Only a little oil." So the prophet Elisha told her to gather as many vessels as she could, borrow them from neighbors, and just start pouring her oil into the vessels. She did it. She must have felt silly. She knew there was only a little bit. But oil kept coming and coming, and she kept pouring, and she filled all the vessels with oil. And then she could sell the oil and pay her debts. Here, Jesus told the servants to put a little wine in each jug. Start where you are with what you have. We talk about this in prosperity class every year. Bless what you have and be eager for more. The other difference in these two versions is how the story ends. In John, it's fairly abrupt. You know, the steward says, "You've saved the best for last." And it says, "Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him." In the other version, the disciples had some questions. And Jesus explained his object lesson to them. The disciples wondered at what he had done. But he said to them, "Why do you marvel thus? Have I not told you that I am in the Spirit, as the Spirit is in me? It is a man who sees only poverty, for he sees with the eyes of the master of the world. But where man sees poverty, the Spirit sees only abundance. What the Spirit sees, I see, and what I see, the Spirit sees, and what the Spirit sees is." I think he means, one of the things he means is look past appearances. Don't get bogged down in what your eyes tell you. Focus on what's possible. That's how we manifest anything. Again, prosperity class. We look to what's possible. The reason that it seems to work sometimes and not others is our belief in what's doable. So if you want to eat something after church today, you believe you can do that. There are people for whom that would be impossible. So increasingly, as we explore our own Christ consciousness, we experiment with what doesn't seem possible. When you don't know how it's going to come about, when you have to rally your own worthiness just to accept something you've imagined, can you have faith then? Not faith that God will magically make everything all right, but faith to start with what you have, knowing it can be expanded through the divine in you. That's our offering blessing every week. Divine love, as me, blesses and multiplies all that I have. There are two hurdles to this, and they're in these stories. One is the ability to believe it's possible. The other is our reluctance to try it, to practice being the Christ in front of people. And you might not care about changing water to wine. Well, some of you would work on that. But there's probably something in your life you'd like to change. So if you really believe it when we say we're divine, and you believe Jesus, that we can do anything he could, and you know the Christ energy was born in you as divine potential, then how will you live your life differently? When and how will you step out to put this awareness into practice? Whether you want to manifest a thing or a situation or something in yourself, you have more power than you know. Start with what you have. Bless it, be grateful, know it is being multiplied, and stay focused on your vision of what can be. Don't be reluctant to be the Christ in expression. The world needs for you to be. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we become still and quiet and turn within. You might want to close your eyes. You might want to breathe deeply. And let yourself shut out everything else. What happened this morning, what's left for this afternoon. Just be here now. That divine power that was in Jesus is in you. So as you turn within, feel for it now. It's who you truly are. Always available when you bring it to your awareness. Whatever miracles you might want to perform can be handled by this divine presence in you. It may not look like magic. It may look like things working out. You might not know how it can possibly work, That's why we're not here alone. We have all kinds of help from the other side. And whether you imagine it as angels or guides or Jesus himself, or whether you simply concentrate on the divine presence in you, it is that power that guides us through this human experience. And so take a moment to get reacquainted with that presence in you, that guide for your life. Grateful for this awareness of who we truly are. Grateful to know that we are spiritual beings having this human experience and are never alone, never separate from God. And so we say thank you and we go into the day knowing who we truly are. And so it is. Amen.